Hello, it's News Talk's Jess Kelly here. Before we get to this podcast, I want to talk to the business owners out there who know the value of having the right partner behind them. When it comes to empowering your business, Electric Ireland is the trusted energy brand that Irish companies rely on. As Ireland's leading energy supplier, they offer fixed price plans, expert advice and future-focused solutions, including solar power installation to support your business on its journey to net zero. Electric Ireland, making your business brighter. Visit electricireland.ie/business to learn more. Now, enjoy your podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The EU has warned that Israel's threat to suspend some international NGOs from entry into Gaza would block life-saving aid. Now, the Israeli registration rules means that international NGOs can be rejected for many different reasons, including denying the existence of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. And clearly, it is a Jewish state and it is clearly democratic. We mightn't like the governments they elect sometimes, but they do elect them by popular mandate. The second one is denying the Holocaust or the Hamas-led attacks on Israel on the 7th of October. Again, any organization that denies the Holocaust or indeed those Hamas attacks probably doesn't deserve to be involved. As supporting an armed struggle against Israel by an enemy state or a terrorist organization, that might be rather more opaque in trying to understand it. This one, promoting delegitimization campaigns against Israel. So that would presumably include countries or organizations that say the settlements in the West Bank are illegal and they should be delegitimized. Or calling for a boycott of Israel or committing to participate in one. Again, might that apply to Irish organizations? I don't know. Finally, supporting the prosecution of Israeli security forces in foreign or international courts. In other words, the International Criminal Court. If you suggest that some people in the Israeli IDF or indeed in the administration should be subject to the attentions of the criminal court, that would get you banned as well. So these warnings that it fundamentally jeopardizes the operations of international NGOs in Gaza and the West Bank are loud and clear. What will it mean for people in Gaza? How has the winter impacted those on the ground? I'm joined now by Kazem Abu from UNICEF. Good morning, Kazem.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, what can you tell us about the latest situation in Gaza? What are conditions like? What is the weather like as the winter bites?
Well, it's really a very dire situation, needless to say. I mean, the Gazans are not having any break whatsoever. Reports are all about deaths of children due to weather condition. All media outlets almost are showing reports that show tents and makeshifts swamped with water. In the hot summer, the Gazans and the civilians are suffering. In the freezing temperatures in the winter, they are still suffering. I'm in Jerusalem now, and it's raining heavily, and it's really, really, really cold. So you can imagine how the situation would be for hundreds of thousands of families that don't really know what to do anymore. I mean, every time they try to have a tent, then there is a certain condition that would push them further into more suffering. Even buildings that have been bombed during the war and before the ceasefire are now collapsing because of the weather conditions. So the need is more than anybody can really think. And I was talking to one of the colleagues about the tragic death of one more child, Atta, 7 years old, which really is a stark reminder, I would say, of the extreme vulnerability of children in the Gaza Strip, but also in the region, for that sake. So winter conditions in Gaza have been really, really relentless, if you like.
How difficult is it to get accurate information from all around the Gaza Strip? Because there's been so much destruction, can we tell how many people are suffering and how badly they are suffering?
I would really have to say that it's a challenge to get not only the information, but I would say that the accurate information. Sometimes you need to verify and cross-check, but there are reports, and reports are credible to a certain extent. We continue to use the number that more than 20,000 children, and I'm talking only children, have been killed in that brutal war. More than 40,000 of them are injured. And by the way, speaking of injured children and vulnerable and sick children, reports are saying that there are more than 15,600 people that are in need simply to get out of Gaza to get treatment, medical evacuation, we call it. Among them is no less than 4,000 children. So we depend on partners in many ways of getting the information. Our teams are on the ground as well. There are reports coming from the Ministry of Health and so on. But we also have to remember that not everything is reported. It's really a challenge in all dimensions in the Gaza Strip.
Now, the Israeli government has said that people who want to continue to bring aid into Gaza must pass a certain credibility test as far as they're concerned. So certain international non-governmental organizations will not be able to bring aid into Gaza. What will be the impact of that?
Hello, it's News Talk's Jess Kelly here. Before we get to this podcast, I want to talk to the business owners out there who know the value of having the right partner behind them. When it comes to empowering your business, Electric Ireland is the trusted energy brand that Irish companies rely on. As Ireland's leading energy supplier, they offer fixed price plans, expert advice and future-focused solutions, including solar power installation to support your business on its journey to net zero. Electric Ireland, making your business brighter. Visit electricireland.ie/business to learn more. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Okay, so look, this is something that is really of profound concern for us in UNICEF, truly, because the international NGOs are critical partners in delivering the life-saving aid. I mean, needless to say that the volume of shelter, and we're prioritizing winterization, entering Gaza remains far below what is required. But even that makes it into the Gaza Strip. In many ways, we depend on a lot of partners and, of course, international NGOs to distribute it. So the ongoing restriction on the NGOs risks undermining the fragile progress made during the ceasefire. And this, needless to say, will come with devastating consequences for the vulnerable children, women and men. So it's really of a very serious concern, not only for us in UNICEF, but other UN agencies that also have to depend on these partners to deliver and to become a part of the humanitarian response in the Gaza Strip.
Now, there is a unit within the Israeli military called COGAT, which stands for Coordinator of Government Activities in the Territories. And they have issued a statement saying that there is more than enough aid going in. In fact, more than the UN has determined it needed. What do you say to that statement from COGAT?
Look, COGAT can say whatever they want. I'm not going to be talking on their behalf, but I can tell you for sure that from their colleagues and the reports that are coming from our partners and our colleagues on the ground, I can assure you that what is entering, the volume of what is entering into the Gaza Strip is far below what is needed. So we would usually advocate for unimpeded and sustained, but also at scale, aid entry into the Gaza Strip. This is critical for the essential services and the humanitarian response in that strip, especially for women and children.
Now, of 100 organizations that want to get this clearance from the Israelis, I think 21 have got clearance. 21 have been banned. And 25 have got clearance, and the rest are wondering, will we get clearance or not? So this is going to be something of a crisis, I would suspect, for all the NGOs.
It will certainly be complicating the humanitarian response, that is for sure. This is exactly where our concern comes. I mean, we usually, look, UNICEF advocates that all regulatory frameworks should support, not impede, a sustained and at scale urgently needed aid to children and families in need. That is how we like to look at it. That is what we advocate for.
Now, at this stage, we've got the first phase of the so-called peace plan, which is the ceasefire. How well is the ceasefire holding at this point? We know that in the days after it was signed, that there were many, many incidents that occurred which seemed to breach the ceasefire. Is it holding now?
It's a fragile ceasefire, to be honest. I mean, indeed, incidents did take place and are still taking place. And every now and then there is a report here and there that says, you know, more people were killed. Let me give you this latest figure that I have. More than 80 children were killed since the ceasefire started. So it's actually a very big question. Is it holding? Is it not holding? We truly hope that it holds because... It's. I mean, the ceasefire is a. It offers a long overdue hope. So, for the sake of all children in Gaza, it must hold.
Now, the question of reconstruction, because the people of Gaza will not be safe and will not be fed and will not be healthy until some sort of meaningful reconstruction happens. But that would appear to us, even though Gaza is off the main front pages at the moment, it would seem that that kind of reconstruction is a long way off.
That is what we also believe. I mean, looking at the reports and trying to follow up on the news coming from the politicians, what we as humanitarian agencies can say for sure is that the Gazans, they cannot wait longer. I mean, their suffering continues even during the ceasefire. I don't really see what is keeping the reconstruction in the Gaza Strip from starting and just moving forward with putting things back on track in the Gaza Strip. At least this is what is being said in the media. All parties seem to be agreeing on this. So what is keeping us from seeing this action? It's one of the things that continues to puzzle us in the humanitarian agencies.
Now, what are you hearing from the people of Gaza themselves? I mean, most parents would do anything they could to safeguard their children, but they don't have the possibility of leaving, and I suspect that they would not want to leave because this is their homeland.
That is very true and very accurate. The vast majority, they say, look, we don't want to leave. We tell them, but you don't have any house anymore. It's just rubble. They say, it's my rubble. So they want to stay, but they truly believe that the international community has let them down so many times. And what they're looking for is some peace. They simply want to live in peace, to have the basics of the basics. If you want, they want their children to go back to school. And by the way, we are gearing up for a massive back to learning campaign, hopefully very soon, in a matter of weeks. But there are also priorities. I mean, there are, like I said at the beginning, there are thousands of them that need to get out of Gaza for medical treatment. So they're not asking for so much, to be honest. Huh? It's just basics that they want. And why is this big number above 15,000 or maybe 16,000? Because only 18 out of 36 hospitals in the Gaza Strip are functioning, and they are partially functioning. The rest were destroyed. So had there been hospitals, decent hospitals, that offer the necessary medical service, then this would have dropped down those who need to get out of Gaza seeking treatment. And again, that includes children. So the dreams, the aspirations, the hopes of the Gazans are really modest following this brutal war. All what they are asking for is actually basically basic human rights, no more. Mm-hmm.
UNICEF works for the children of the world, and particularly in this moment for the children of Gaza. But here we have a childhood that has been lost, and possibly, you know, great mental health difficulties going forward, given what many of the children have seen.
Well, that's very sad, and that's very true. We are trying to offer, and one of the most important things that we're trying to offer is the mental health and psychosocial support to children. Since the ceasefire, we've been offering tens of thousands of children this particular type of response of service. But the challenge is, we have to admit that the challenge is really big. One most important element that helps children to recover would be for them to go back to school, which hence takes me back to the back to learning campaign. But some of the colleagues, and I've been talking to some of them on the ground in Gaza, are actually reporting that around 25% of the children, school-age children, are facing difficulties, talking, pronouncing. So that adds to the complication and adds to the challenge. But we're there together with our partners, whether UN agencies or INGOs, and we are there to stay and to deliver because we're simply mandated to do so. We are a reflection of the international community's will, if you want, that want us to be there. This is why states vote to extend our mandate, and this is what the international community would like to see.
Kazem Abu of UNICEF, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thanks, Pat, for having me. Thanks.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hello, it's News Talk's Jess Kelly here. Before we get to this podcast, I want to talk to the business owners out there who know the value of having the right partner behind them. When it comes to empowering your business, Electric Ireland is the trusted energy brand that Irish companies rely on. As Ireland's leading energy supplier, they offer fixed price plans, expert advice and future-focused solutions, including solar power installation to support your business on its journey to net zero. Electric Ireland, making your business brighter. Visit electricireland.ie/business to learn more. Now, enjoy your podcast.